Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuva Samech Tes. We're on Samech Tes Amud Beis. We're towards the top of the Amud. We are starting with the words Tanur Rabbanan. We're going to continue our discussion regarding Nedunya. Okay. There's an assumed kickstart that's going to go into the marriage by her father. Her father's going to submit money into the marriage. So this is referred to by a number of different terms to describe it. We sometimes describe it as Nedunya. Sometimes we call it a Parnasa. Sometimes the Gemara just simply refers to it as Ksuva. Regardless of what the term is, just to keep everything simple, we'll call it Nedunya. And basically it's a dowry. The dowry that her father brings into the marriage, that'll kickstart the marriage. So how much is he required to give? So, there is a suggestion, right? We learned in the Mishnah back in the Mishnah that at least 50 zuz is the minimum suggested amount that he should be giving into the marriage. Is he absolutely obligated to kickstart the marriage? No. We learned back in the Mishnah that if they agree that the father's going to marry off his daughter and not give her a penny, okay, Rachmanis, that's not the minug. It's certainly not the accepted practice, but he's not obligated. But it's certainly recommended. Not only is it recommended, but the Mishnah already taught us that if he's a man of means, he should be giving more than 50 zuz. 50 zuz is just a basic minimum suggestion. But the truth of the matter is he's talking about his daughter. And mind you, by the way, she's not getting any of the Yerusha, so keep that in mind, and he should be giving her a good amount. Now, I say good amount. We'll be more specific in just a moment in terms of how much he should be giving, but he should be giving a good amount of his estate over to his daughter, especially considering the fact that she's not getting a Yerusha. Okay, good. So that's what we've been discussing now. And so our first discussion for the beginning of today's daf is going to be, really, yesterday's daf. But the first discussion is going to be, is there a statute of limitation on this Nedunya? And right, most of today, what we're going to be discussing is the following. In the absence of the father, Rachmanis, the father dies. And now the brothers are in control of the estate. So now their sister is getting married. Is she going to get a Nedunya from the estate? The father would have given, presumably. So is now she entitled to a Nedunya from the estate? That's going to be a big part of today's daf. Most of today's daf is going to revolve around that particular question. Let's all stay tuned. So the Gemara starts off Tanur Rabbanan. So with a Braisa. Okay, what you're hearing in the background is the sounds of Elul. Okay, Tanur Rabbanan, we learned to the Braisa. Habanos bein bagru achelo nisu, bein nisu achelo bagru, ibdu menazona sehem. Okay, so as far as when you have daughters, so whether or not he's having a okay, fine. So so whether or not she is a Bogeris before she got married, or whether or not she got married or before she was a Bogeris, so at that point in time she has no longer going to be receiving mizonos. Okay. In other words, when the father dies and now the estate is required to support her, meaning it's their sister, but they have a requirement, an obligation to support them. That's mizonos, mizonos abbas, which is part of Tanai Ksuva. So there is going to be terms. In other words, it's not unending. Now, when it comes to the alman and when it comes to the widow, so that could potentially be a non-ending expense on the part of the estate. But when it comes to the daughter, it's not unending. It's going to terminate when? Either when she becomes a Bogeris or when she gets married. However, Parnasa. Okay, so Parnasa over here is the term that we're using to describe the Nedunya. So that, lo ivdu Parnasa san. So she does not lose her Parnasa divrei Rebbe. Meaning the assumption is that the estate is going to give her a dowry. Okay, and it's going to be 10%. How do I know it's 10%? Because we're going to be hearing that again and again. Meaning the Gemara keeps repeating that number. So she is not going to lose her Parnasa, meaning they're going to be required to give her 10% of the estate as part of her Parnasa. Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Afiv du Parnasa san, and Reb Shimon ben Elazar says no. There is going to be terms in terms of the Parnasa as well. In other words, there will come a point in time where she will not get a Parnasa. So Kate said Enosa. So wait one second. So they become a Bogeris and they get married only after the fact. And they're not going to get Parnasa. So what are they supposed to do? So according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the answer is Ketzen and Osos. Now this is going to sound a little bit rough, but what they're going to do? So Chosos Elahen Baalehem Omitzil Lam Parnasa Son. So they get a rent a husband. Now I know that sounds funny, but In other words, according to Rishon Yohanan Elazar, their only game plan in order to get their parnasa is to get married before they turn into a gedola, before they become an adult. And so what they're expected now to do is get married beforehand in order so that they can get their parnasa. Okay, but that's all if you subscribe to Rishon Yohanan Elazar. I'm Rav Nachman. I'm Elihuna Hilchasak Rebbe. The halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, rather the halacha is like Rabbi, which means that there is no statute of limitation regarding the parnasa. Regardless of when they get married, they are in fact going to be entitled to the nedunya from the estate. Eisvei Rav LeRav Nachman, the Gemara challenges his position from Rav. The Gemara challenges Rav. Challenges Rav Nachman, and that is Yisomashi Siyasa Ima Wachia Midata. So let's say you have an orphan. She was married off by either her mother or her brother. And what do? They wrote an adunya for her. But, in other words, basically a basic minimum amount, right? 50 zuz, 100 zuz or 50 zuz. Remember, 50 zuz is like the basic minimum that they wrote for her. So, now, what she could do at a later point in time is appeal. And she could say, oh my goodness gracious, right? I was taken advantage of. Meaning when I was younger and I got married, so I didn't know any better. But meanwhile, right, what did my brothers do to me? They basically had an opportunity to give me a dowry and they gave me, almost nothing. So she can appeal. So time of diktana, hagedola vitra. Now, the only way that the appeal process works is only when she got married as a katana, where she's not expected to have understood or known any better. But if she got married as a gedola, so it sounds like there's going to be a mechila. It sounds like she will forego whatever other nedunya would in fact have been due to her. So the Gemara says, lo kasha hadamachai hadalamachai. So the Gemara says, look, the halacha is like Rebbe, meaning the halacha is like Rebbe in that there is going to in fact be an entitlement to a nedunya even when she's a gedola. So how do you understand the brisa that we just learned together? It's very simple. In other words, if she gets married as a gedola and she accepts, in other words, and the brothers are saying, here's your nedunya, 50 zuz. And she's like, okay, I get it. In other words, and now she's a gedola. She understands. She's not, they're not giving her issa nechasim. So if she doesn't protest and she's a gedola, okay, that's mechila. She forgoes the remainder of the nedunya that she would have been entitled to. But if she's moche, if she protests and she says that's unacceptable, meaning I'm going to get married, and right now you're only giving me 50 zuz, it's under protest. Meaning you really are entitled, I'm really entitled to more. You really should be giving me 10% of the estate. Okay, so I'm lodging right now a protest, and later we'll go to court. So if she's moche, if she makes a protest, so then at a later point in time, she can successfully sue her brothers to receive the balance of the nedunya. Hachinami Mistar, but the Gemara says that this approach that we just gave is in fact the correct approach. The Imkain, Kasha, the Rebbe, Ad Rebbe. Because look, otherwise we're going to be stuck within the positions of Rebbe. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa, Rebbe Omer, Basin, Izonis, Menachem, no Telesis, and Nechasim. So if the daughter is currently being supported by the brothers, okay, I know it's confusing, daughter, brothers. Okay, let's say sister. Okay, in other words, they are all looking at the same estate. Again, they inherit it, but at the same time, she's not inheriting it, but she's getting supported. So if you have the daughter, meaning their sister, being supported by the estate, by the brothers, so no tell us Yisr Nechasim, so she's going to take 10%, meaning of the Nedunya, for the Nedunya. So Nizonis in and Nizonis low. What does it sound like? It sounds like that the Parnassus is tied to Nizonis, that she's only receiving dowry only while she's getting supported. It sounds like, but once she loses her support, she's no longer getting a dowry. That's what it sounds like. But meanwhile, did we not hear Rebbe at the beginning of Shir today? Rebbe at the beginning of Shir says that, look, as far as Mizonis are concerned, there are limitations until she's an adult. In terms of Parnassa, no limitations. So what's happening over here? How did you hear Rebbe at the beginning of Shir today? And Rebbe right now makes it sound like the two are tied together. Elav Shmamina. So hadamachai hadalamachai shmamina. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, it's very simple. And that is that as an adult, she's getting married and they're basically not giving her dowry and she's accepting it. Fine, she accepts it. Meaning mechila. And if she's moche, and she's protesting, so that means that she's in fact going to be entitled. Okay. Amale Ravina la Rava, Amalan Rava de Brava Mishimcha, Bagra and Sri Chalimchos. If she's a Bagara, she doesn't have to be mocha. Meaning just because she becomes an adult, she doesn't have to she doesn't have to lodge a formal protest, meaning she's still going to be entitled to Nadunya. However, Nises, however, right? Wrong transition word, right? Nises in Etzricha Limchos. So, if she gets married, she doesn't have to be Mocha. Now I'll say it. However, Bagra v'Nises Etzricha Limchos. But she becomes now a Bogeris. Now she's an adult. And now she's getting married. And now she's turning to the brothers and she's like, okay, wish me a mazel tov, I'm getting married. And the dowry, please. So here she has to make, and they're not giving it to her. So she has to lodge a formal protest. It's not that complicated. In other words, but she has to do it. If she doesn't do it, then she's mochel. Okay. Umi amar Rav Hachi, the Gemara says, really interesting. Right, Rava really says that. V'ha esrei Rava l'Rav Nachman Yisoma. So meanwhile, what about the Yisoma? V'shani lei. The Gemara says, I'll tell you the answer. Hadamache hadalamache. The Gemara says, okay, the answer is very simple. Protesting versus not protesting. Meaning, as an adult, if she's getting married as an adult and she doesn't lodge a protest, so that's a mechila. As if she's getting married as a child, there's no expectation for her to make a protest because She's not a bardas. Okay. So that was the distinction that we made. So lokasha had to come mizanim minayhu, and had to lokim mizanim minayhu. So the Gemara says, so I'll tell you when there's an expectation that she needs to protest, and there's an expectation she doesn't need to protest. And it goes like this, and I'm presenting it like Rashi. And that is as follows. Okay. She got married. Okay. And she's not getting a dowry from the brothers. The brothers are just, they're being difficult. They're not giving her a dowry. So now what? So under normal circumstances, what normally happens is the following. When she got married, they're no longer supporting her because they don't have to, right? In other words, once a girl gets married, so the mizonos gets cut off from the estate. She no longer receives mizonos from the estate. Okay, good. So now what's left? The only thing that's left from the estate for her is a dowry. That 10% of the estate that goes to her. Okay, and she's an adult and she's getting married. So now, if she's quiet, so that's mechila. If she says to them, I want my 10%, and they say no, she says, okay, good, I'll see you in court. Fine. And she's protesting. Good. That's under normal circumstances. And that's how we've been saying it now for the last 10 minutes, and we're staying on point. The only exception would be where they continue to support her. Now, this is a little bit strange. It's unusual. In other words, she's married, and they're still supporting her. Okay, it's fair to ask, why are they supporting her after she's married? She has a husband, and the husband's obligated to support her? I don't know. Okay, it is a little bit strange. But under the circumstances where they continue to support her, so now, interestingly enough, they didn't give her a senechasim, she didn't protest. I understand why she didn't protest. You know why she didn't protest? Because she's embarrassed. In other words, right now, currently, she's still on the payroll. They're still giving her money as mizonos. So the reason why she didn't protest is because, right? I don't want to come off as being, you know, unappreciative. So right now I'm not going to say anything. But she is in fact entitled to Issa Nechasim. Under those circumstances, her silence is not understood as mechila, okay? Because of the embarrassing, awkward nature of the relationship that exists right now as they continue to support her. That's the way Rashi presents the Gemara. Okay. I'm Rav Huna, I'm a Rabbi Parnasa, in a Ketanai Ksuva. Okay, so good. So up until now, so what we have been litigating is that the estate has to give her a dowry. The estate has to give her a dowry of 10%. Is there come a point in time where she forfeits her 10%? So the first issue that we debated, Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon and Elazar, is there going to be a statute of limitations on this dowry that she receives? Meaning, is she going to be receiving it as an adult? Machlok is between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The halacha is like Rabbi. She doesn't forfeit it. In other words, age is not going to be a forfeiture of that dowry. That was point number one. Point number two, what about mechila? Okay, so under most circumstances, if she gets married as an adult and the brothers don't want to give her the 10% and she's quiet, that's mechila. Okay, so those are the two basic points that we've covered so far this morning. Next. The Gemara now wants to know, this is Issa Nechasim. So do we label it as Tanai Ksuva? Okay, Tanai Ksuva. So again, every time a man marries a woman, so there are contractual obligations. We've been discussing it the entire Masechta. That's what's called Tanai Ksuva. So is this parnasa, this dowry now, where in the event that the father dies, and now we're looking at the estate, and 10% of the estate should be going now to their sister as a dowry. So is that part and parcel of Tanai Ksuva? So the Gemara says, interesting question. Who cares? Meaning, right? Lamai nafkamina. What practical difference does it make if we call it Tanai Ksuva or not? So. Oh, correct.
So, what would you put in the
ksuba? Ksuba
is given to by the
first, not by the... In other words, means that when their father married their mother, so, and
put into the
you don't have, in other words, Tanai Ksuva doesn't have to go into the ksuba. No. Tanai Ksuva just simply means that these are the assumed responsibilities that he has to her. And, right, and it doesn't have to be written. Okay?
On the Mathila instance, does she waive that money forever?
Yeah. Yeah, correct, correct.
So unless she
speaks up right away? Yes, correct, correct. In other words, they'd say the obligation exists, but if she's quiet, she's mochel. Correct, correct. So my eino k'tanai ksuva. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're saying now that it's tanai ksuva, or we are questioning whether it's tanai ksuva or not. Gemara says, wonderful. And what difference does it make? So inaim, so the ilo parnasa tarfa mimishabde tonight suvalo tarfa mimishabde. So the Gemara says now, when it comes to parnasa, so for that there's a lien. And when it comes to tonight suva, there's no lien. It means as follows: the brothers have obviously, as part of their estate, they have properties. Okay, and now they have to support their sister. They have to support their they have to support the widow, and they have to support their sister. That's both contractual obligations. Okay, so now, every time you have a contractual obligation, so what does that mean? So it means that, generally speaking, so the note holder, in this case, well, let's call it the widow. Let's not focus on the widow. Sorry. Let's keep this nice and simple. Let's focus now on their sister. So she's a note holder against that obligation, so therefore what? So therefore, presumably, there's a lien attached to the properties on that obligation. So isn't that true? Generally, yes. Not here. Why not here? Because when it comes to mizonos, mizonos is an unending obligation. You don't know how much mizonos can translate into. It's a variable. As a result of that, what the Chachamim basically did is they stepped in, they said, we're not attaching a lien to properties for mizonos. Why? We want to protect buyers. Someone buys a property. And what? And now he has an outstanding obligation. If it's a fixed obligation, okay, that's discoverable, and it's finite. But if it's something which is not fixed, like mizonos, so then the Chachamim basically said, we're not attaching a lien to that property. And there is no lien on a property on something which is not fixed. Good. So that's when it comes to mizonos. We're not asking about mizonos right now. We're not asking about the dowry. The dowry obligation, that's a fixed amount. It's 10% of the estate. So maybe there is a lien on that. So my kamash malan, so mazim b'chol yom, motzien l'parnosa ve'im motzien mazonos. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you what. It happens to be that there's a lien on the parnosa. The only problem I have is I don't need Rav Huna to teach me that. Meaning I know that because it's done all the time. Meaning go to any court throughout Jewish geography, and what you're going to find is that everybody's collecting parnasa from the dowry. Sorry. Everyone's collecting parnasa from the properties, and even the properties are sold. Right, she has a lien on that property for her dowry. Okay. So the only problem the Gemara has right now is we knew that already. And I didn't need Rebbe. And Tosos over here points out, why can't we just simply say, you know why the courts are doing it? The courts are doing it because Rebbe said to do it. So it's obvious from the Gemara that this practice existed well before Rebbe came into play. So Ve'ela. So the Gemara says, good. So again, let's reset. We have a statement by Rav Huna Amar Rebbe that says Parnasa is not like Tanai Ksuva. So what we thought it meant was that as opposed to Tanai Ksuva like Mizonos, where there's no lien attached to the property. By Parnassa, there is a lien attached to the property. The Gemara's counter argument is that it's true, but we already knew that, meaning that was a given. So Ella, the Gemara says, Ilo Parnassa Gavya Nami Mimetatale. So Tanai Ksuva Mimikarke Gavya Mimetatalo Gavya. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe the distinction goes like this. When it comes to Tanai Ksuva, so Tanai Ksuva is collectible from properties, not from movables. But when it comes to Parnassa, Parnassa can be collected both from properties and from movables as well. So the Gemara says, L'Rebbe, D'V'idi, Mikva Gavya. So the Gemara says, wait one second. According to Rebbe, do you know for Mizonis you can collect from both property and from movables? According to Rebbe, Mizonis can be collected both from property and from movables. So once again, I'm looking for a distinction between the obligation of Mizonis and the obligation of Parnassa. That this is not one of them, at least according to Rebbe. Rebbe says that for these obligations, you can collect both from property and from movables. So, El Amai Parnassa Ina Ketanai Ksuva, Licha Detanya. Okay, so this is now going to be round number three, where Rav Huna quotes in the name of Rebbe that when it comes to Parnassa, Parnassa is not Tanai Ksuva. And therefore, what does that mean? What's the practical implication? Kedetanya. Omer, Al Yizona Benosav Nechasav Ein Shamam Lo, Al Yisparnasu Benosav Nechasav Shamam Lo. Sha Parnassa Eina Ketanai Ksuva. So what it means is the following. Father's dying. Father gives the following instructions to his sons. You're not supporting your sisters. I'm sorry, what? He says, as part of his sava, right? Look, you're just simply, I'm instructing you. I'm telling you, you're not supporting your sister, right? They're not getting mizonos. So now after he passes away and after the burial, so their obligation, of course, is to support their sister. He told them not to, right? He can't rewrite the rule book. In other words, he got married to the mother. He wrote her a ksuva, even if he didn't write her a ksuva. In other words, he's contractually obligated. The estate is contractually obligated via the ksuva to go ahead and to support the sister. They have to support their sisters. Okay. So even though he puts that in the tzava, that's ignored. But let's say he puts in the tzava and look, as far as the estate is concerned, no dowry from the estate. So again, it does not speak well about his personality, and it certainly, in other words, this is not going to go in the eulogy. But in other words, these instructions are going to be followed. Why? Because this is not contractually obligated. Meaning the dowry is, again, I said in the beginning of Shir today, but here we're really hearing it, and boy are we hearing it, right? But here it is a recommendation. It's a strong recommendation, but. If he wants to give very clear instruction that this is what I want. I want none of the estate to go towards the dowry. Okay. Yeah, correct. Right. That's a rough pill to swallow. But in other words, most fathers are going to be interested in making sure that their daughters have a dowry. But okay. But it's not, the point of the Gemara is that it's not contractually obligated. No, that's exactly the point of the Gemara. No. Right. Right. In other words, the Ksuva has a lot of contractual obligations. This is not one of them. Okay. Okay. We are now, okay, we're starting now, Samach Tesam and Aleph. We're gonna reopen the case regarding Nechasim Shubadim. Okay. Is there gonna be a lien on the properties against this obligation? Talalei, Rav LeRebbe Benichiti. Okay, so Rav wrote a question to Rebbe, and the way Rashi describes it is that between the lines. In other words, there was already correspondence going in the direction from Rav to Rebbe, and now it's basically right between the lines of our already existing correspondence. So he writes in between, oh, by the way, here's another question. Okay? And he added an additional question. Whatever. So, paper back in the day was at a premium. Okay, so he wrote between the lines. So, ha'achin sheshibdu mahu. So let's say that the brothers, that what they did is that they created a lien. In other words, we already know that when it comes to mizonos, so there is no lien that exists on the property against mizonos. Again, it's not a fixed amount, and because it's not a fixed amount, Chachamim wanted to protect buyers, so therefore there's no lien on mizonos. Now, regarding parnasa, so we equivocated. But what happens now if the brothers say, look, we are going to be mishabed. We are attaching a lien to these obligations. So can they do so, yes or no? So this is a question that Rav posed to Rebbe. So Hava Yosef, Rebbe Chia Kameh. So Rebbe Chia was in front of Rebbe, right? Rebbe Chia and Rebbe were very close. So Amar Lei. So Rebbe Chia says to Rebbe, Machro, Amar Lei, Machro, oh, Mishkano. So he says, what if the property was either sold or used as collateral? So Amar Lei, so Rebbe says to Rebbe Chia, my nafkamina, bein machro, bein mishkano, motzil la parnasa, bein motzil la mizonos. So he says, look, as far as I'm concerned, so whether it was sold or whether it was used as collateral, the property will have a lien against the parnasa, but again, not against mizonos. In other words, Rebbe's answer was really clear. You can't create a lien on property not against mizonos. Again, this is a buyer protection program that was done by the Chachamim, and therefore, even if the brothers want to attach a lien to this property against mizonos, it simply will not take effect. In other words, we're protecting buyers. On the other hand, parnasa is a fixed amount, and because it's a fixed amount, so therefore, a lien is attached against the parnasa. Now, Virav, now the Gemara over here just interjects for a moment because Rav did not ask the question of whether the land was either sold or it was used as collateral. And why wasn't Rav clear about the question? Okay, this is a quick tangent. V'Rav I machru kami b'alei nechtav lei machru and I mishkanu kami b'alei nechtav lei mishkanu. So why wasn't Rav clear about the question in which the land was either sold or it was collateralized? So Rav Tarvayu kami b'alei. So the Gemara says because Rav really had both questions in mind. If he would have asked the question of the land was sold, and the answer that was given to him is that you take away the land that was sold, so kol shekein mishkanu. So if the land was sold and you're taking it away from the buyer, so if the land was just simply mortgaged, so for sure you're going to take that away because the land did not actually trade hands. And ishalach lei motzien akati mishkanu kamibayle. And in the case of mechira, If the answer was ein motzien, so then he would have only had an answer on the sale, but not on mashkon. And v'ikasvin alei mashkano ishalach lein motzien. So kol shekein machro. And if the question was mashkon and the answer was ein motzien, so good. So now I know that ein motzien not for mashkon and certainly not for mechira. And ishalach li motzien akati machru kami ba'ilei. But if he said motzian by mashkon, okay, that would have been mashkon, but what about machru? What about a sale? So echtov le shibdu, to mashmehachi, mashmehachi. So what Rav's strategy is that I'm going to use the word shibdu. Incorporated within shibdu is a dual question of whether the land was sold or it was just simply mortgaged. Okay. Rav Yochanan amar echadzeh ve'echadzeh ein motzian. Okay. Now, Rebbe's answer was very clear. And that is that when it comes to mizonos, no lien on the property against mizonos. Good. That's clear. Parnasa, so Rebbe had an interesting position, which is there is a lien against the properties against our parnasa. Again, it goes back to the fact that the parnasa is a fixed amount. It's 10% of the estate. And so therefore, she has now an obligation on that property, and she has a lien on that property. Good. That's all the opinion of Rebbe. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says no. Echazav, echazay, motzian. And Rav Yochanan says, no, there is no lien on the property, not against the mizonos, and not even against the parnasa. So here, a really simple question. And that is, Rav Yochanan is an Amora, and Rebbe obviously is a Tana. Now, generationally, they were not that far apart from one another, right? They may have even overlapped, but still, in other words, did Rav Yochanan state his position knowing what Rebbe said and disagreed with him? Alternatively, he didn't hear what Rebbe said. Had he heard what Rebbe said, maybe he would have changed his tune. So Tashma Dietmar. So the Gemara says, I'm going to deduce from the following. And that is Misha Mesvinich Shebanos Ubein. So let's go over now the following scenario. Okay. The father died leaving behind three children, right? Two daughters and a son. Okay. Let's follow together over here. And now, Kadma Rishon, but not Isa Nechasim. So what happens is the first daughter gets married. Okay. Now, as per the practice, so now she is going to be entitled to 10% of the estate. That's the dowry. And so she's now has just received 10% of the estate. So far, so good. Now, velo he speaks Shnei Ligvos Ad Shemesa Ben. Okay. Next thing that happened is that the son died. Okay. Now, how did Yerusha work when the son was alive? The son inherited everything. And the daughters were, each one of them entitled to 10%. As in the dunya. Okay. But now, the son died. Now, in the event that the son died, so now what happens to the estate? The daughters now become the inheritors of the estate. Each one of them now entitled to a full 50% of the estate. But hopefully everyone here is thinking the same thing the second daughter is thinking, which is, wait one second. Let's slow everything down. In other words, remember, she already took 10% as her dowry. So wait one second. I'm totally prepared now to split the estate with my sister. But first things first, let me first take my 10% for my dowry, and then we'll split the remainder of the estate. What's fair is fair. So I'm Rav Yochanan Shnia Vitra. So Rav Yochanan says now, no. In other words, be happy with the fact that you're getting now half of the remaining of the estate. Okay, and so Rav Yochanan says, you're Mevater. Okay, you're not getting the dowry. Again, slightly rough, but it's not, as the Gemara is going to point out, she's still getting a considerable amount of money, but she's not going to get her 10%. She's mevater. So Amr Rabbi Chanina Gedola Mize Amru Omotzi La Parnasav Emotzi La Mazonos Ata Marchnia Vitra, and Rabbi Chanina loses his mind. Rabbi Chanina says to Rabbi Yochanan, you can't be serious. Meaning, I'm telling you that Parnasa is collectible from sold properties. If Parnassa is collectible from sold properties, you don't think that she can collect from her very own estate for her Parnassa? You got to be kidding me. Okay, so Rabbi Chanina loses his mind. It happens. Okay. But in other words, but he seems to be making an extraordinarily reasonable point. So a Parnassa is such an obligation. You can collect it even from sold properties. So, okay. So Rabbi Chanina doesn't agree with Rabbi Yochanan. Now, im isa nemalei. So now, when Rabbi Yochanan hears Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Chanina is clearly not happy with Rabbi Yochanan's psak, so why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan just simply say to him, "So manamra, who's of that position? Meaning, who said that? Why didn't Rabbi Yochanan just simply respond like, oh, that's interesting, that's news. Who said that? So it's clear that Rabbi Yochanan clearly knew of that position and didn't move him." In other words, he didn't budge. Meaning, he knew that Rebbe said that position, but as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, good. That's Rebbe's position. I don't agree. Meaning, I'm of the position that Parnassa is not collectible. You don't have a lien on your Parnassa. Okay, good. V'idil malolam lo shmi'alei v'chi shmi'alei kabil. V'shani hasam di'ika revach besa. Gemara just counter-argues, and Gemara says, maybe he didn't hear the chiddush of Rebbe, that there's a lien on Parnassa. And even if he heard it, he would have accepted it. And still, Rabbi Yochanan would have maintained his position in this particular case. Why? Because Revach Besa. Because, look, she's getting anyway. Meaning, the whole point of Parnassa is that she's not getting any money from the estate. In other words, she's not a Yoresh. When they're a brother, she's not a Yoresh. Okay, good. But in other words, there's no longer a father. She's now getting married. If the father would have been there, he would have kickstarted the marriage. Okay, so now the Chachamim instituted 10% should go to her. 10%. Now in the event that the brother died, and now each one of them is receiving 50%, and now what's the debate over? The debate is over now. The first 10% that went over to the daughter, look, you're getting a significant amount of money. Now the whole purpose of Parnassa is that your marriage gets a kickstart. Here you're getting more than just a kickstart. You're getting nearly half the money. In other words, in this particular case, Rav Yochanan would simply say, there's no need for the institution of Parnassa over here. This is what's called Revach Beisei. Okay, and one more epilogue, so to say, to this debate, to this discussion. So Amalei Rav Yemalei Rav Ashi Elamiata Ashkeche Mitzias Mitzia Ba'ama Deika Revach Beisei. So Hachin Amalei Lo Yavinalei Yisun Nechasim. So let me get this straight. Okay, let's say I'm going to use a silly example, but let's say she won the lottery. Okay, in other words, let's move away from this complicated case and let's just go to a regular case where there's no longer a father. Now there's an estate, and now she's getting married, and she wants a pranasa, right? And she's entitled to a pranasa. She's entitled to 10% of the estate as an adunya. And now, let's say she happens to have been a lottery winner before. Can they at that point say to her, "Look, the whole purpose over here is to kickstart your marriage. Baruch Hashem, you're right. You have a mitzvah. You're good." So is that a sound argument? It's not a sound argument. So what's the difference between that and over here? So the Gemara says, Amar Lei, so Rav Ashi says back to Rav Yemar, Anar Rav Echbeise, Mehan Nechse Kamina. The counter argument is very simple. You're talking about money coming from an outside source. I'm talking about money that's coming from the estate itself. She's receiving a good percentage of the estate itself. When that happens, there's no need now to give her more of the estate for Issa Nechasim. Issa Nechasim, 10% is just so to help her out. But if she's receiving almost 50% of the estate, this estate, so there's no need to give her 10%. Okay. Good. So far, over the course of this morning, so we have been discussing one and only one topic, and that is the dowry that now the estate is providing for her in the absence of the father. So how much of a dowry is she entitled to receive? 10%. Okay, questions that we have litigated so far this morning have been whether or not this is a collectible obligation that she has a lien on the properties against this obligation. That turns into a major debate amongst, I was going to say, Tanayim. Tana Amora, right? Unusual that we have such a machlokas, but we do. Rebbe and Rav Yochanan are debating this very question in terms of whether or not there is a lien on this obligation. According to Rebbe, there is a lien on this obligation, and according to Rav Yochanan, there is no lien on this obligation. Is this a collectible obligation from both properties and from movable assets? So that also was open to a discussion, but Rebbe's of the position she can collect from both properties and from Metaltalin as well. Amar Amemar. Bas Yereshes Havia. Okay, now, how are we filing this? This is a really lumdish question over here. How are we filing this 10% that she's receiving it? Are we filing it under basically the category of Yerusha? Now, the Torah does not give her any Yerusha. This is clearly a rabbinic legislation that she is going to be receiving 10%. But within this rabbinic legislation, so they give it a category, right? In other words, this is conceptual now. And as a category, maybe it files under Yerusha. Okay? It's a quasi-Yerusha. So, Amalei Rav Ashi Lameimer, Ilo Bai Lisluke Bezuzei. So, Hachinami Delamatsa Lisluke. Amalei In. So, I Bai Lisluke Bechada Are, Hachinami Delamatsa Mesalakle, Amalei In. And now, if we're filing this under Yerusha, what does that mean? It basically means, say hello to your partner. Okay? She's a partner in the estate. Meaning, If she was just simply a balas chov, if this is just simply an obligation that they had to give her, so they could just simply buy her out, right? Pay her off, not buy her out. Pay her off. In other words, yes, we owe you 10%, but we owe you 10%, so we'll pay you however we want to pay you. But if we're filing this, if this falls under the category of Yerusha, so at this point in time, she's now a shareholder. As a shareholder, so now they can't just simply say, "Hey, you take that." In other words, no, I'm a partner in the estate, and that is all as per the position of Amemar. Rav Ashi Amar Bas Balas Chov Havya, and Rav Ashi says, "No, I disagree." In other words, the correct way to look at her is not as a Yoresh, or let's say better grammatically, not as a Yoreshes, but rather as a Balas Chov. She is owed an obligation. Now, Rav Ashi's position, right, it's a little bit easier to digest. In other words, because she's not a Yoresh, the Torah does not give her a Yerusha. This is admittedly a rabbinic legislation. And in terms of the better way to look at it, or the easier way to look at it, is that she's a Balas Chov. She's owed an obligation. A Memar eventually capitulated to this position. So, Afa Memar Hadar Be Damer of Minyume Bereder of Nechumia Hava Kamina Kamada Memar Vase Hayisisa Lakamada Hava Kabaisis and Nechasim. Okay, so we have over here a really straightforward case, which is a woman now is coming in. She is claiming her 10%. And, sorry, I skipped two words. And I saw that she was totally ready to be bought out. So, if they would have given money, she would have accepted money. And a Maimar at that point in time was quiet. He didn't intervene. Anyway, the point is that a Maimar would have allowed them to just simply buy her out, or just simply, right? In other words, given her the money and be done with it. Okay. Hashta balas chov havia. Okay. So now, basically, we're not looking at her as a yereshes. Meaning, we entertained her for a moment. The Gemara rejected it. The Gemara now basically says she's a balas chov, right? She's indebted. They're indebted to her. Now, here comes a really interesting next development of this discussion. They are indebted to her. Who's the they? In other words, it's an estate. Any time you deal with an estate, is this principally, primarily the father's obligation that just simply devolves to the next generation? Or is it primarily their obligation? Meaning the estate's obligation, the kid's obligation. Hopefully at this point in time you're wondering, great question, what difference does it make? Big differences. So Balas Chov Avia, da abo da achei. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how it makes a difference, and that's as per the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin tells us that whenever you're collecting from the estate, so the recognition is that on one hand you're owed money, on the other hand they're the orphans. Okay, orphans. In other words, there's two people we're looking to protect over here, as far as Chazal is concerned. One, of course, is the one who's owed the money, but on the other hand, however, we're also looking to protect the estate. So, when you're collecting from Yesomim, two rules. Number one, which grade property can you collect? The lowest grade, Ziboris. Rule number two, if you're collecting from the estate, they don't know what the father's dealings were, and now you're coming and collecting. Granted, you're holding a note, right? And you're owed the money. But still, they don't know, so therefore you have to make a shvuah. So if you're collecting from the estate, meaning as orphans, so number one, you can only collect from Ziboros. Number two, you can only collect with a shvuah. Okay, great. Now let's turn our attention to our discussion. So they, the estate, now are obligated to give her a nedunya. The correct way to look at her as a balas chov, right? They're indebted to her. Who's the they? Is it the father's obligation now, which devolves to the kids? Or is it their principal primary obligation? Now, Lamai Nafkamina, now we know. Lamai Nafkamina is going to be whether or not she's collecting Ziboris and whether or not she has to make a Shua. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, good. Now that the question's on the table, so the Gemara says, let's see. So, Deravina, Agbe Labarta Deravashi, Mi Marbere Deravashi, Mi Beinos Vishlo Beshua, Mi Bere Derav Samar Bere Deravashi, Ziboris Beshua. And so, there's a whole generational storyline that goes over here, but the basic upshot of the Gemara is that when they're collecting directly from, when she's collecting directly from the brothers, she's collecting Beinonis, she's collecting mid-grade property, which every Baal Chov is entitled to collect. And also she's collecting without a Shvuah. Okay, and then what happened is that when the brothers died, or in this case, the one brother died, and now you're going to the next generation, so now you're collecting from the orphan, then you're collecting from Ziboros, and you're collecting only with a Shvuah. But the point is that the obligation is principally on the brothers. On this obligation of Parnassah, of dowry, is principally on the brothers. Just a couple more endpoints before we get to the end of today's daf in the Mishnah. Shach le Rav Nechemah b'd Rav Yosef le Rav b'r Rav Huna zutam n'ardaki asya ha isasa le kamach agbe isa nechasim afilo mi'itstro bla. So I want you to collect her 10%, meaning she's entitled to her 10%. I want you to collect it. And over here the chiddush is that you can collect it from a millstone. Okay, there is a general discussion. This is an accounting issue in terms of what's considered karka and what's considered metaltolin. So basically, if it settles on the ground, even though it's something you could in theory pick up, but if it's settled on the ground, and generally speaking, it's on the ground, so that's considered karka. Okay, so you can collect from this millstone. I'm Rav Ashi Kavina Bei Rav Kahana Hava Magbina Filo Me Amla Debase. Okay, rentals. Okay, rental collection. So rental collection, is that considered metaltolin or is that considered karka? Interesting. The Gemara says from an accounting standpoint, karka. That falls under the category of karka. And as a result of that, that can also be collected for pranasa. Shach Rav Anna Rav Huna Chavrin Shlam. Okay, Rav Anna sent the following letter to Rav Huna. And it starts off with the words, Huna Chavrin Shlam, right? Peace be upon you. And here a woman's gonna come to you. Agba isanachse. So, and what I want you to do is I want you to collect her 10%. In other words, the estate now, the father died, the estate just collected the Yerusha, but she's entitled to 10%. I want you to collect it. So, Havi Yasav Rav Sheshes coming. Now it happens to be that Rav Sheshes was right in front of Rav Huna, and Rav Huna took slight offense over here. Why? Because when the letter was addressed from Rav Anan to Rav Huna, the letter opened up with the words Huna. Okay, and whatever. In other words, he was a gadol. He was the right. In other words, you should say Rav Huna. So Havi Yasser Rav Sheshes Kamei Amalei Zozil Amalei. So Rav Huna says to Rav Sheshes, So here's what I want you to do. You're going to go back to Rav Anan, and I want you to send the following message. Uvishamti Yehi Mandalo Amalei. And with the force of a shamta, if you don't say this, and that is anan anan mi mekarkeu mimetaltale. So should I be collecting from karka or should I be collecting from metaltale? Now it is a good question, but hopefully you figured out already that I want you to address him anan anan, meaning just like he called me Huna, I'm going to call him anan, and see how he feels about that. Uman yase be marzecha bereisha, and who should be at the be marzecha? Well, we're going to explain what that means in just a moment. So, also Rav Sheshes coming to Rav Anan. So, Rav Sheshes now. So, unfortunately, he's got this unfortunate mission that he's got to do. He's got to go back to Rav Anan and basically return the favor. So, Rav Sheshes goes to Rav Anan Amarle. So, Mar Rabba, Rav Huna Rabbe de Rabba, Shamute Shames Mandalo Amarle. So, he says, look, you're a great man. And I'm going to be excommunicated if I don't deliver the message like I'm properly told to do so. So basically, like, I'm apologizing on the front end. I know this is going to be uncomfortable, but okay. The ilav d'sham is lava kamina. And had it not been for the cherem, I wouldn't be saying this. So basically, it's an apology on the front end, but he was bound to say this. And now he repeats the message. And he repeats the message exactly word for word as he was instructed to do. So Azra Ravanan coming to Mar Ukva. Okay, so a little bit of drama over here. So now Rav Anan goes to Mar Ukva. Amrlei. So Chazimar Hechashalchle Rav Huna. Anan anan. Ridiculous, right? Rav Huna sends me a letter, and here's how he describes me as anan anan. Now it seems to be right. The whole story is unfortunate, but in other words, I'm just wondering, right, and hopefully respectfully, in other words, he didn't have the self awareness to know that when he originally sent the letter to Rav Huna, he did the exact same thing to Rav Huna. Okay, maybe that's exactly the point. Maybe he did miss the point. Va'od marzach d'shalach li lo yedina maynihu. And oh, by the way, Rav Anan says I didn't understand the second question, meaning I don't even know what that word means. So Amrlei, Emily Easy. So Mar Ukva says, okay, do me a favor. Could we go back all the way to the beginning? Like, how did the whole story start? So Gufa Duv de Hechave. So as we're now on the top of the Amud Beis. So Amrlei, Hachiva Hachiva Maisa. So okay, so now Rav Anan is telling Mar Ukva the whole story from the beginning. So Amrlei, Gavad Loyada, my new Marzach Shalach Le Rav Huna, Huna Chavrein. So he says, look, Mar Ukva says to Rav Huna, sorry, Mar Ukva says to Rav Anan, I got to tell you, you're in the wrong over here. Meaning when you originally sent the letter to Rav Huna, so you should not have described him as Huna. In other words, you should have called him Rav Huna. And on top of that also, look, you don't even know what the word Marzecha means. And Mar Ukva says to Rav Anan, like, you don't even know what some of these words mean. and you feel comfortable describing it when corresponding to somebody else and calling him, instead of Rav Huna, you call him Huna, and you don't even know what some of these words mean, meaning basically know your place, right? Stay in your lane, know your place. So I'm going to have right to the, fine. So, Shach Le Rav Huna, I'm sorry, my Marzache, good. Okay, so Adkan, that got us through the end of the drama this morning regarding Rav Anan and Rav Huna. Anyway, as long as we're here, so Marzache, what does the word mean? So, okay, good. That's the rest of our sugya today. We're going to stop at the Mishnah. So, my Marzache, Aval. So, the word Marzache is a reference to an Aval. So, Dichsiv, Kamar Hashem, Al Tavo, Beis Marzeach. Right? The pasuk in Yirmiyahu, in the context, it's talking about an Aval. So, Am Rabbi Abau, Minayin La Aval Shemesh, Shemesh Barosh, Nemar, Evchar Darkam, Ve'eshev Rosh, Ve'eshkon Kemalach Begedud, Kasher Aveleim Yitnachem. Okay, pasuk in Iyov that describes that the Aval sitting at the head. Meaning it's a strange scenario, but every time you go to the base Aval, that's the configuration, right? He sits basically at the head. So, Yenachem Acherim Mashma. Now, the pasuk in Iyov is a little bit strange. The Aval is going to be comforting others, right? So, Amar Avnach Mar Yitzchak Yenecham Ksiv. So, even though we read it Yenachem, but it could be read as Yenacham, which means that he's not giving the comfort, but he's receiving the comfort. Okay? Which is, of course, very strange, meaning it's basically Kriyuk Siv. It's written one way, but pronounced another way. Okay. Marzuch Amar Mihacha, Visar Mizach Siruchim. He quotes another pasuk in Treyasar. This is from Amos, that the Mar Vizach Nases Sar Lisiruchim. So darshan the pasuk in Amos that basically sits at the head. Amar Rav Hilchasam. Okay, so that was a slight tangent. We conclude for today. Mimikarke velame metaltele and bein la mazone bein laksuva and bein la parnasa. Okay, so as far as the conclusion of the Gemara, this is not the first time we're hearing this conclusion. We heard it already earlier in the Masechta. Okay, good. This is called review chazara, and that is that when collecting. So you only collect from karka, you don't collect from metaltelin. And that's in terms of mizonos to the support of the daughter, meaning their sister, only from karka, not from metaltelin. As far as ksuva is concerned, the ksuva is only going to be collected from karka, not from metaltelin. And parnasa, and the dowry, the 10% that we spent our entire morning discussing, that's only going to be collected from karka, and that's not going to be collected from metaltelin. Okay, I already pointed this out earlier. It's okay, I get to point it out again. And that is that the Gaonim, the Gaonim modified. In other words, at the writing of the Gemara, the Gemara's conclusion is really clear that these obligations are only collectible from property, not from movables. The Gaonim, and we suggested earlier that it really also became a result of the fact that we totally moved from an agricultural economy to a much more commercial economy. And so the Gaonim basically said that your property and your movables are going to be mortgaged against these obligations. The Gaonim said that by Mizonos as well? I don't remember. Presumably. I don't remember. But I think so as well. Okay, anyway, Adkan.